Welcome to the Beyond Mining podcast series. This podcast series was recorded from a number of talks, panel discussions, and workshops held between the 22nd and 29th of November 2020 at the Beyond Mining Counterconference. This counterconference was organized by Blockade IMARC. Blockade IMARC is made up of an alliance of organizations that has been protesting the International Mining and Resources Conference held annually in so-called Melbourne, Australia, on unceded Wurundjeri and Boomerang country. You can find out more information about Blockade IMARC and the Beyond Mining podcast series at blockadeimarc.com. Now, sit back, relax, and enjoy your podcast.
Hi everyone, and welcome to another session of Beyond Mining, Protecting Land, Water and Life. My name's Kim. I'll be facilitating this session tonight. I'm a settler living on unceded Wurundjeri Willum country, or the land of the Woiwurrung language group, the land under Bunjil the Creator, the Eagle and Wa the Crow in so-called Melbourne. My ancestors settled in so-called Australia from Northern England, I think, and I grew up on Tunurong country, which is a country that Uncle Larry will speak a lot more to tonight. I'm an activist and organiser that works on climate and social justice issues and campaigns to protect the forest, or as it's actually called, the bush. We also have Nick and Anissa online tonight helping us with tech. I don't know if you can give us a quick wave. If you can, guys, give us a wave. So, if there's anything people need, reach out in the chat. First of all, I want to acknowledge that we're hosting this meeting tonight on unceded Wurundjeri country in Melbourne. We would like to pay our respects to elders past, present and emerging. We pay our respects to First Nations people across the continent who have been protecting country for time immemorial. We pay our respects to our amazing First Nations speakers tonight, and also any First Nations people tuned in here now with us on Zoom or on Facebook Live later. We acknowledge all the First Nations activists today who are fighting for country and culture despite ongoing colonialism. And we also pay respect to Indigenous people around the world, many of whom who have joined us this week during this conference and really are on the front lines of the fight against extractivism and for land, water and life. Quick housekeeping stuff. We've put all the participants on mute because of the size of the meeting. So if you need anything, type in the chat, as I said before. At the end, the Q&A section that would usually be for the participants, we actually are going to allow the participants to have a bit of a chat to each other and ask questions of one another. But if you do have any questions for the chat, chuck them in and we might be able to follow up with resources or something like that after the session. We're going to try and keep the session to the planned 2 hours to respect the time of our speakers. However, if our panelists want to extend the conversation, we will let that run because this is a core issue to justice on this continent. And yeah, we want to give it as much space as we need. That said, we could dig into these topics for weeks on end. So we will try and keep to time, and I'll sort of flag how long each section is supposed to be. And so everyone's aware, this session is being recorded and streamed on Facebook Live. So everybody's across that. We're really lucky to be joined by some amazing panelists tonight. We've got Gawa Mikulu Jarrett, Uncle Mikulu. He's a Gumbangir elder from Gumbangir Conservation Group. They've done some amazing resistance work this year against New South Wales Forestry Corporation, who are logging their country and cultural heritage in Nambuka State Forest in so-called New South Wales. We're talking, you know, rainforest, old growth, really beautiful country. They stopped logging on their country by walking into coops, launching a landmark legal case that really challenged forestry in a way that it's never been done before, stopped work for the first time in 20 years. And they also established a sovereign camp in the forest. So a really special thing is they're practicing culture and language and songs and sharing them with non-Gumbangir forest protectors. We've also got Wangan and Jagalingu custodian Maro Johnson joining us. Maro has been fighting Adani for a very long time now. The WNJ have been opposing this mine for nearly a decade, using a range of different tactics, taking things to court here, calling out internationally, challenging companies and contractors, And Marawa has been really instrumental in that as an organizer and a spokesperson, an amazing voice for the protection of her country. This year, the WNJ gave Adani an eviction notice and told the company they had no authority on their country and they re-established a sovereign camp. We're also joined by Uncle Larry Walsh, a Tanarong elder who stands up to defend the bush from clearfell logging on his country in so-called Victoria. Larry was a signatory to a letter that was signed along with sovereign people from the Tanarong, Wurundjeri and Gunaikurnai nations, where logging is still destroying incredible bush. In this letter, the custodians asserted their sovereignty over the area, called for a moratorium on logging, and argued that the government had breached the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People by handing Vic Forests the management of their country without their free, prior, and informed consent. We also welcome Gunai Gadichamara and Jabbarong custodian Lydia Thorpe, who has been a staunch grassroots advocate and activist for country and First Nations people for her whole life, and who has also recently been elected as the first Indigenous senator to represent Victoria. And we also welcome Arika Walu, a sovereign custodian of the Gunai and Gadichamara nations and the Jabbarong language group. They have just started an amazing new land back initiative, Warren of Kanak, which will be the first sovereign land back initiative owned and co-managed by Kulin women and non-binary people. And the initiative supports the continuation of local cultural practices using a mixture of pre-colonial permaculture methods to remedy land and water. Nyata, Arika. Thank you so much for your time and joining us tonight, everybody. I really appreciate it. So for the first 5 minutes or so, I was hoping we could just go around all the speakers and say hi to everyone else on the panel and tell us a bit, tell us anything that's important to you, like your pronouns or anything else, and a little bit about your country. Tell us what's special about it for people that might not have been to the area, what kind of animals and totems preside there, what laws and protocols. If you don't feel comfortable or you don't want to share anything, that's totally fine. But yeah, just introduce yourself and your country. And Gawa Miklo, do you mind starting us off?
My name is Michael. I'm a Gumbanger man from Nambaka. It's good to see you all. I'm Gumbangir. The land is Gumbangir Wo also. The great ancestral spirit give us the land in the dream time. Every part of the earth is sacred. We are a part of the earth and the earth is a part of us. I'm a Gumbangir man. I grew up on the Nambaka Heads Aboriginal Mission when speakers, fluent Gumbanga speakers were alive. They did not teach me the language. I went back in 1997 to learn the language. I find that learning the language has found and got me in contact with my land and gave me power to speak on behalf of my land. My country goes from Nambaka Heads in the south to Grafton in the north on the mid-north coast of Australia on the east coast and out to Gyra, 6,000 square kilometres. Our totem is the gargle, which is the ocean. The girimaring is a little micro bat, is the men's totem, and the nian is the women's totem. Our Gumbanga philosophy is that we keep life going, and we also make it better. And the way we do this is respect the autonomy of every little living thing and everything on the planet and not threaten the existence of anything. My country is devastated last year by the bushfires. The koalas are in danger of being extinct, and these guys are coming back and chopping down the only sanctuary that these koalas have got. That's insane. So Gumbanga people, along with one of my nieces who are here with me today, I can see Sandy, has formed the Gumbanga Conservation Group, and we stood fast in the Nambaka State Forest and fought against them, and we stopped them. And they're coming back, and we're going to fight them again. Thank you.
Thank you. Mara, would you like to introduce yourself next?
Hello, my name is Marwa. I'm Wurdi Yidikaba, so I'm a part of the Wurdi speaking people. Can you hear me? Oh, okay. Sorry, I'll stand myself up a bit. Can you hear me now? Excellent. I'm a part of the Wurdi speaking people. We're the Wurdi dialect of the broader Birrugaba Nation. Birrugaba Nation, is pretty much between Townsville down to Rockhampton, out west of the Drummond Range, and everything coastal along that way as well. I come from the South Central Southern dialect, out towards Claremont Way, and then also have close ties with Kungaloo, people of Central Queensland as well, crossing over into their traditional land there at Treasure Creek. My great-grandmother, she was a Kungaloo woman, and my great-grandfather's a Wurdi man. In our marriage system, and where my family clan group come from, Kungaloo women come north over Treasure Creek and marry Wurdi men, and then our Wurdi women from there go east, and have close connection to sea country, just off of the coast of Mackay there. My birthright is to all of Wurdi country, but unfortunately we live in a context of native title and whatnot. So at the moment, I am a part of a native, my people are a part of a native title claim that's essentially claiming not very much of our land, but the joint claim to the west of us, Jagalingu country, is pretty much encompasses the entire Galilee Basin, which is one of the largest untapped coal reserves in the world. And of course, proposed to be opened up by Adani, but not only Adani, Waratah, which is owned by Clive Palmer, and a whole bunch of other mega mines who are lining up to come through there as well. Core Birrugaba country, core Wurdi country, is actually where the Bowen Basin is. And that's already been ravaged by coal mining for decades now. And so growing up on my country, there was no other reality other than coal mines being in your backyard and driving past one every day, and the whole industry in the area pushing that narrative, that is sort of the only thing that we can depend on, and the only industries that our people should go into or be supported to go into, and kind of just that place being also very racist. I can recall in my childhood, I think it made very clear to me that they go hand in hand with each other, racism and extractivism and the destruction of Aboriginal land. That's quite foundational. And of course, everyone here knows that. But just to reiterate, that's kind of the context that I come from. Our law is the native bee. And it is the native bee nest in my country that we're actually also fighting to protect, as long as our, as well as our water. So Kamukamuyunji, or Kamu, is water. The great water spirit, we come from Mundagara, the rainbow serpent, and that's our dreaming. And we believe that the essence of our being is actually in the water, and it is our life force. That's me. Thank you.
Thanks, Marwa. Lydia, do you want to introduce yourself and talk a bit about Gunai and Gunditjmara country?
Oh, certainly.
Sure. Thanks for the invitation. I think the work that you do is incredible. I was there last year and saw the violent behaviours from the police, stopping anyone speaking up against the extractive mining industries. It was an incredible presence that we had, and we were fortunate to have a welcome to country from Aunty Carolyn from Bunwurrung country, in which the land that we were all protesting on was at. I'm a Gunai Gunditjmara woman, Djaparung woman, and it's shit. Like, you know, they've manufactured, like the colonizers have, you know, read the art of war inside out, back to front, and they're using it very well in today's, in 2020 in this country. It's about divide and conquer. Native title is about divide and conquer. I'm sure my brothers and sisters that have just spoken and Uncle Larry, who I haven't yet heard speak, will attest to that, that these policies and these legislative colonial regimes are there to divide us as a people, because when you divide the people, then you it's easier to conquer the people. And native title is a very good mechanism to be able to do that. It makes us fight against each other. It makes us fight against one line down a particular piece of land, which we've never really done. I mean, we, you know, tribally, traditionally, there were disputes, but not how the oppressors are doing it today. And they've worked out a very good strategy to divide us, find out who will help the government, who will help the mining companies, who can be sold off easy, because at the end of the day, we're poor, hungry and dying in our own country at the rate that's, you know, incredibly a human rights violation, and they know that. So I feel that the pressure's on more than ever in our life, even more so than 1770 and 1788. I feel that there's so many forces coming at us. One is colonization, one is government oppressive legislative processes, but also one is more of a conservative corporate style of blackfella business, which when it's your own mob, it hurts more and it's more difficult. Like when we know who our enemy is, which is quite clear, it's the colonizers and it's the government. But when you're working, when you're trying to work with corporations who are signing off on some dodgy deals, and it's not all of them, but there are certainly some of them that are signing off on dodgy deals and not getting free, prior and informed consent from our peoples. We see that with the Japarung trees. And Japarung trees, for those that don't know, you know, that's a construct of the cultural heritage legislation in Victoria, which we opposed about 15 years ago. We knew then what was going to happen today, like, you know, and we just sit back and go, oh yeah, we knew that was going to happen, because we know how our people operate. And whilst we're being smashed in the southern states and lost a bit of language and you know, have been almost obliterated by colonization, we still maintain a very strong connection to our country and our language and our song and our dance. And I think that's a true testament to our strength as people of our country. But the corporation structure is very dangerous. And Japarung trees, you know, we just saw one of our ancestor trees be cut down the day that Dan Andrews, you know, his freaking big donut day where he had a scotch. It was a happy moment for a lot of Victorians, but it was also a devastating moment for Japarung people, including my family. And to see the Premier sitting back having a scotch in celebration was an absolute insult. And we're still affected by that. You know, if it's not enough dealing with transgenerational trauma, to see that kind of trauma happen in, you know, 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago is we're still reeling in that. And then back on Gunai country in Gippsland, southeast coast, you know, we've never consented to any logging on that country. It's the corporations that consented. They're lying to us. There's illegal logging happening there and their totems becoming extinct or on the world extinction list. And who cares? Let's just talk about a treaty and let's all feel good about that. So, yeah, I'm a bit cranky, but I'm I'm so blessed to be amongst my sovereign brothers and sisters that that's what gives me strength to continue my job. And it's a shit job. It's a shit job trying to work with people who are racist and climate deniers and who are mates with the extractive industries. But, you know, I'm willing to sacrifice my life and my family's life to be there and call that shit out. And I will continue to call that shit out so that the media, you know, the beauty about being in this position is I have the media and I have the parliament. It's all being recorded in Hansard about our contest for sovereignty in this country and the fact that we've never ceded our sovereignty and we never will. And that's something that this country has to deal with at some point in time. And it's not just about extractive industries and IMARC. It's about allies walking with us to make sure that that this country accepts that we are the sovereign people of these lands.
Absolutely. Thanks, Lydia. And you are so staunch and uncompromising in that, in the new position you're in, and that's fantastic. We're going to talk about sovereignty. You have all each asserted your sovereignty in different ways, and we do have a lot of space too to talk about native title and corporations. I'm just going to throw to Uncle Larry first, and then we'll hear from Marika as well. Uncle Larry, do you want to tell us a bit about Tunurong Country?
First of all, I acknowledge the traditional owners of the land I'm on, which I'm on Wurundjeri land. I pay my respects to their elders. I pay my respects to their ancestors, but I also pay my respects to their elders, past, present and emerging. And I pay my respects to all people in this conference and listening to this conference that come from Indigenous peoples. And I pay my respects to your ancestors and to your elders, both past, present and emerging. My country, Tunurong Country, I'm from the Nearay Bulluk clan. I'm from the people that lived in the side of the hills and mountains. My country ranges from the mountain ranges to the Fox Ironbark Forest to the Basalt Plains, and in it and from it run 5 to 6 rivers. My country people were some of the most moved. I am the 5th generation that was moved. I made sure there would never be a 6th, because at one stage, one of the organisations, because my wife at the time was pretty crook, they wanted to take my kids. So I was living in an ironbark forest at the time. So I went and grabbed my kids, and they stayed with me until their mother was well again. I returned them to their mother, but started living in my country just in case I was needed again. I'm from Wa Raven. I was born on Goanna Country, and one of our family members, important family member, is what you call the Tawny Frogmouth. For me, it's too many of my people being moved so many times that they've forgotten who they are. I was one of the first to go back home, take my family home. Some of the other families followed too. And I was, thanks to the Original Heritage Act, which a lot of Aboriginal people back then fought to get in Victoria, was lucky to be a part of that in a small way, but I ended up being a cultural officer back then. on behalf of the Wurundjeri Woiwurrung. We started re-veg projects to try and get the Euros to understand the importance of re-veg for the waterways. But unfortunately, corporations came in. Aboriginal, under the Aboriginal Act, Aboriginal corporations, where a lot of people who for a long time had never known their country, for a long time had lost the ways of their country. And it puts me at odds sometimes with my own while I try and keep teaching the children, because I have faith that the children will win it. I may not, that's okay. I've lost a few over the years. But I sometimes say I'm like a farmer. I find a seed. I tell everyone what that tree could be. So I plant the seed, knowing that I may never see it bloom to full bloom, because that tree will go to be older than me. So the next generation see that tree and they go, oh, that's not what they said. It's not quite what they said. So they take another tree, another seed from that tree that's grown, and they plant it. And they tell their children and their grandchildren the story. And the next generation sees it full bloom. They do the same. They go, well, that's not quite what Nan or Papa said. So we plant another one. A forest is an idea. A forest is a spirit in its own right. A forest is the seed in its own right that plants itself, and the way it behaves and the animals and birds around it behave, if we listen carefully, we can hear what they're saying. Don't get me wrong. I'm not a man who understands all of it. I accept, like everyone, we never can. But I accept I only have a small role. And I accept that as long as the ideal and the fights keep alive, even if I don't see the end of them, I know we'll win in the end. And that to me is the most important thing. Now, I was saying to you before this started that a lot of the questions you're asking, I'm not sure I'll know and have enough answers, but I will have faith that Lydia and Rika would have more of the answers than I will. And that's
me. Plenty of the answers too, Uncle Larry. Thanks for sharing. Rika, do you want to speak a bit to introduce yourself and your country and what you're up to, and then we'll dive into the next topic?
Nyata mwa, ma Arikawalu, ma Kulin, ma Dehert Wurrung, Jap Wurrung, Peak Wurrung, Kirai Wurrung, ma Jit Gan Garawangu, ma Burang Garawangu, ma Alamin Murta, ma Kulin, ma Murta, ma Karana, ma Pupuk, ma Kulin Pupuk. Hello, I'm Arika Walu. I'm a sovereign of the Dehert Wurrung, Jap Wurrung, Peak Wurrung, and Kirai Wurrung language groups. I'm of the Emu Wren Dreaming and the Pelican Dreaming. I represent thousands of generations of sovereign mothering and I gather here today for the rights of my child and all sovereign children for our future. My country, a little bit, I guess, my mother's father's country is Gunai country, which I grew up on, Lake Tyers Mission. I was grateful enough to be taught the language in primary school, which has given me a lot of knowledge. A lot of knowledge about that country, which I'm able to pass down to the younger generations now. And I'm also learning a lot more of my grandmother's country, which is the Japurung and Kirawurung, Dahurtwurrung languages. So, both countries are southern parts of Victoria, I guess, east and west. Japurung country is, I guess, in this context of what we're talking about at the moment, is Gunajmara country is World Heritage listed. So we are under a lot of pressure at the moment. My people are under a lot of pressure. Those who are organising to have that area being catered to tourism. It's lava. We're lava country, so a lot of our stories are that we have of that country are go back to the eruption of the volcanoes in that area, and also how we use the kulo, which is the lava stone, to create our fish nets and our fish fisheries and our houses, which is our warrens. So I guess particularly that area is under threat from pressures of not just the mining industry but also the tourism as well. So I think Japurung country, I just wanted to acknowledge that Garry word, which is used to be an old millions of years ago it was an island, so it has a lot of old seeds on there, I'm looking to save some of those seeds in that area of my country. Cool. Yeah, I won't keep going on, but
thank you. That was
introduced my country and
fantastic introduction. Thanks heaps. So what we're going to do now is we're going to have about 20 minutes to talk about some of the stuff that was mentioned before around native title and corporations and especially the Victorian Cultural Heritage Act, especially in light of Japurung. But first, you've all asserted your sovereignty over your country in different ways. Obviously, Arika, with your initiative, it's an initiative of self-determination, whether it's sovereign camps on country to stop logging. I think we will throw to Gawa Miklo again if we can, because he's got to go at 7. So can you just tell us a bit about Gumbangir Conservation Group and how you've asserted your sovereignty and sort of all the brilliant work practicing culture on country and stuff like that?
At this stage, can I introduce Sandy Greenwood? And I'd like her to come on and talk because she was a big part of this as well. So, Sandy, can you please come on? Is she there? Kia ora, Gawa. Sandy.
Oh, Gawa. Here she goes.
Gawa. Nini, Daro, Wumba.
Sorry, Gawa. Can everyone hear me?
Breaking up a bit, but keep trying.
Okay.
My name is Sandy. I'm Uncle Miklo's niece. And Uncle Miklo and I were have worked together, you know, all this year to protect country. I think it was a part of a movement where First Nations people were, you know, starting to assert our sovereignty and starting to take action. And very organically, we had a beautiful allyship. A lot of beautiful allies in this area helped us, stop the forestry trucks and take, you know, we went to court. We did a lot of different things. We did some pretty big things in a short amount of time. And from that, the Goombanga Conservation Group was formed. And we're here and we work together, blackfellas and environmentalists, to protect country. We're still going to court currently. We've got a big legal case still happening. Gawa, our beautiful Gawas, which is our uncles in Goombangir, guide us, and they've been there from the start, protecting us and giving us so much cultural wisdom. When your uncles tell you that there's sacred sites all through the Nambucca State Forest, you don't just sit at home. So that's what we're doing. And they're going back again in January. And so we're just going to continue the fight. We're really proud of the Goombanga Conservation Group because it's just, as I said before, it's white fellas and black fellas working together. And some pretty magical things can happen from that. So I think that's all I got to say. Thank you for listening, everyone. And I'm just glued to the screen. I feel honoured to be a part of such amazing sovereign people. And I'm guided by you, all you fellas. And I'm just so thankful that we're here and we're doing this. So thank you.
Thanks, Sandy. It's so good to have you on.
Thank you, Sandy. The Goombanga people did not give up their land. You know, Goombanga people fought for their land, and our people died for our land. And we had no say when the sea getters come up the Nambucca River to destroy our beautiful rainforests. The Goombanga people had no say in what went on. You know, the sacred trees, you know, our carved trees, our sacred border rings, and all our sacred land and ceremonial places were destroyed, and we had no say. We had no say. They rounded all the Goombanga people up and put us onto reserves. They grabbed other people from off their lands, the Dangati people from the south, the Bunjalung people, and they put them all in one area. They made missions. You know, we had no say in what went on. But now, you know, I think we have to get away from this. They are the authority and they tell us what to do. We have to get away from that and we have to stand up for our rights and tell them that, no, this land is our land and it always will be our land, you know. And we have the right, and we have to put ourselves out there. We have to really put ourselves in front of these things and say, no, stop. You're destroying our mother and our sacred places and our land. And by destroying this, you are destroying yourself, and you'll destroy everything, every one of us. So we will be fighting. When they come back in January, we will be there, you know. And the more Goombanga people come together, the stronger we will be. If there's hundreds of us, then the media will stand up and say, "Wow, look what's going on here," you know. And other people come. The more people there, the better.
Thanks, Uncle Miklo. That's awesome. Lydia also has to go at 7, so we're just going to change up the structure a little bit. Uncle Larry, Erika, and Mara, let me know in the chat if that's not going to work for you, but I might just direct a couple of questions to Lydia next. Lydia, you've asserted your sovereignty over your different countries in multiple ways. You've stood in the way to protect Ngāu Ngāu Gorge on Kaurna country. You're obviously participating in parliament, all sorts of activism, and Jabiru as well. So I guess I'm going to ask some more specific questions soon, but when, what are some ways in the past that you've asserted your sovereignty, and what are some ways that sovereignty can be asserted in such a rigged system that's always geared towards the colonial system?
I think we've always asserted our sovereignty since invasion. We've done it in a whole range of different ways. Like, you know, Arika's my little sister, by the way, and Roo, that was a beautiful story that you told. So thank you for that. I think that, you know, like our grandmother or our grandmothers, they survived extermination. So there are seven clans left of the Gunditjmara out of over 70. Now you think about that. A clan is massive. A Blackfella family clan is massive. And they wiped out over 63 other clans. And only seven survived, and we are survivors. We are descendants of those survivors, of those matriarchs particularly, who survived massacre. And that's an assertion of sovereignty, maintaining our survival, maintaining our presence, maintaining our connection, our culture, our language. Decolonizing is an assertion of sovereignty. And it's standing up and asserting that sovereignty on your country. You know, it's important that it happens on your country. You can't assert sovereignty on somebody else's country. And when I fought that now fight, I had no idea about Greenies. I had no idea about the Greens. I had no idea about running a campaign. I just stood up for what was right. I saw that this Duke Energy was coming, a multinational company, and that wanted to put explosives through the Nau Nau Gorge, a million-year-old rock form in the middle of East Gippsland. It had rare callistemons. It had all this greeny environmental you know, it's something that they cared about. But I'm like, yeah, that's good. But I need to find out what the story is to this place. And so I went to my old people, which is also an assertion of sovereignty because it's still practicing our old law. It's still practicing our old culture. And I didn't do anything until I spoke to my old people out at Lake Tyers and matriarchs, and they said to me, under no circumstances should anything touch that gorge. It will create a catastrophe, pretty much. And I can't share the story because I don't have permission to do that. And I told Duke Energy that too. But it's the only bend in the pipe from Longford to Sydney because we fought. And we fought the only way we knew how to, and that was to put up the Aboriginal flag, tie a dog to it, have a campfire behind it and say, you can't come through. This is our land. You're not destroying it. And that's all we did. That's all we did. Although there were areas where we had to fight our own mob who signed off on the deal, which wasn't very nice because when you do that, you know, you cop it from your own mob and community. But that's part of our fight, right? Like we're not only fighting the system and the colonial oppression. We're trying to decolonize everybody else so that they understand our fight. So sovereignty is something that the Australian government say that they have, and that's been quite a fun time in my short time in Parliament when they talk about economic sovereignty and this sovereignty and that sovereignty as Australians. I'm like, fuck, like, really? Let's talk about sovereignty. We say we're sovereign, you say you're sovereign, so why aren't we having a conversation about who's actually sovereign? That's where we're at in this country right now. And Erika might not agree particularly, and that's my family, my own blood. And there are others that might not agree, but I believe that we have to have a treaty in this country and discuss, we have to negotiate sovereignty. We are only 3% of the population, and the fight is getting harder. Like, you know, you've got 20,000 kids in out-of-home care across the country. You got 441 deaths in custody. You got incarceration rates skyrocketing out of control, and women particularly, 400% up on Aboriginal women being incarcerated in Victoria alone. And then you got, you know, how many children are locked up of ours, then the destruction of country. And it's like, which priority do you wake up to that next day? And, you know, we're fighting the fight here to get some kids back home or get someone out of prison or fight for, you know, raise fucking money for a death in custody because they don't have no support when someone dies in custody. And then we get the Japaran tree cut down. So it's like, which way do you go? Which priority do you have? And we are only 3%. So we're getting few and fewer. And that's why allies are so important in this fight. But it has to be first people, sovereign people leading that fight, not a politician. The sovereigns that you have here and other sovereigns I know you're all connected to. And whatever message I need to take into that place, then I will do that. But I'm guided by the grassroots. And that's where my heart is. That's how I've been raised. And I'll never part from that. But if we don't, you know, it's like Greenies talk about climate emergency. Well, yeah, it's a climate emergency, but it's also equally sovereigns, first people of this land's emergency. And if we don't connect the two and fight for it holistically, then you'll never win climate change. You'll never win it. Without us, you won't win it. If the first people are dead and gone and assimilated and whatever, then we'll never have climate justice in this country or this world. It has to be first people that provide that leadership and that guidance, but also, as Uncle Larry said and others have said, like, we are part of the earth. We are the water. We are the animals. If that goes, we go with that. So the weaker they get, the weaker we get. And that's more the reason we need everyone in this country to fucking wake up and realize that Indigenous people around the world, and I was at Madrid last year at the climate negotiations, and Indigenous people around the world, they're talking about sovereignty, they're talking about protection of land and water, they're talking about child removal, they're talking about incarceration, they're talking about deaths in custody. It's like, we just sat there and cried together. Because we all experience the same thing in our own countries. And, you know, Uncle Robbie always said, it's 2020 vision, this is it. COVID was part of it, I believe. Ancestors had to have some intervention that stopped what you're doing. Take stock, look at the destruction. Experience what it's like to go for a freaking walk along the Mary Creek or the Darabin Creek and appreciate nature and the birds. That how often did people do that before COVID? So I'm, you know, I might be a bit mad, but I believe it's a bit of a divine intervention with Trump and the other freaking far right extremist leaders we have around the country. An intervention came and said stop, and now this is our opportunity to take over. We've got the people on the ground. We just got to get everybody to walk with us. And, you know, there's 76 frigging Commonwealth countries around the world, all got treaties with the first people, except for this one. So it's time. And if they, you know, if we come up with a treaty that's full of bullshit, then we can say no to it. If it doesn't include care for country, care for water, and the capacity building of our people at the clan and nation level, then it's not worth going, it's not worth saying yes to. And I'll leave it at that, but I just think it's time for a treaty in this country, and we can bring that climate justice into the treaty. Treaties for you just as much as it is for us.
Mm. First of all, I'm glad you mentioned how the well-being of First Nations people has to be part of protecting the environment and country, because I was going to mention the message, Dick, that you brought into Parliament. And yes, climate justice in this country can't be achieved without justice for First Nations people, because we don't even understand this continent that we're on. But also on treaty, just before you go, and thank you so much for joining us, Lydia, much appreciated. You've called out, you know, people like Vic Forrest for acknowledging country while destroying it. And again, there's talk about a treaty and people saying, you know, that Victoria has the strongest cultural heritage laws in the country. But if that was the case, well, the directions tree, people wouldn't be grieving over the directions tree at the moment. They still wouldn't be logging all over Kaurna country after the fires. So can you speak to, you know, it being more than tokenistic, and the role of, you were talking a bit about the role of sort of the state and extractivist companies and stuff deferring to Aboriginal corporations exclusively rather than getting, sorry, I'm trying to combine a few questions, but Dan Andrews said something about if we waited for total consensus on Japurung country, then we'd never get this road built. And first of all, like, that's white supremacy in action, prioritising lives on the highway over Japurung lives. But secondly, the point of getting total consensus on an important issue is that those most affected by the decision make the decision. And in the case of sacred women's country on Japurung land, that's Japurung women. So, yeah, could you speak sort of generally to these rigged structures, and if we're going to have a treaty, what that needs to mean? Sorry, that's a lot of questions at once before you go.
Yeah, that's all right. Look, good on Andrews. Good on Queensland and Northern Territory for being the saviours, the white saviours, as Labor like to do, say all the lovely, nice things and look like they're on our side. But while you're talking about treaty, you're logging the friggin' life out of the Central Highlands. You've got a mass fire sale on Crown land, which they promised us was part of the treaty negotiation. We've got totems becoming extinct. We've got a Japurung tree that's been chopped down. Where the hell is the good faith in that? Like, I put pressure on them about Stolen Gen and reparating Stolen Gen. They announced it the week that Auntie Eunice Wright passed away, one of the oldest Stolen Gen fighters that stood beside me calling for reparations. She didn't see her reparations, and the audacity of the government saying, oh, we'll pay for your funeral. Like, I'm sorry. And then after she's laid to rest, they announce reparations, which, lovely announcement, but Stolen Gen is still waiting for what, you know, now they're setting up a committee and setting up all the bullshit, all the bureaucracy, and going to make it really hard for Stolen Gen. There's absolutely no good faith in this. And if we have to rely on governments and Queensland, Marawa, sister girl, good to see you there. We've got to catch up, by the way. But, you know, Queensland's talking about treaty, and they extinguish Wanganjangaloo's native title rights in the middle of them saying, oh, let's get all warm and fuzzy about a treaty. Like, no, you can't do that to Wanganjangaloo and then talk about treaty. Like, it's off the table as far as I'm concerned. And then you go to the Northern Territory And you have, you know, the same people that are handpicked by government leading these treaty talks. And they're good people, but the government, you know, you've got to work a certain way for to be picked by government. You go to Northern Territory and they're fracking the country and still want to talk about treaty. Like, it doesn't work like that. And the Northern Territory intervention and the cashless debit card, like, how can you have the audacity? That's not a treaty. That is not a treaty. Treaty is about peace. Treaty is about stopping the injustice against us and our land and our water. And that's what I want to see. And I think that it has to come from the grass. I want to be led by the grassroots. So local government, I think we have an opportunity. And if you know, you all go start talking to your local government areas and talking about treaty and having some yarns about that in your local areas, then that's what I want to see happen right around this country, including pay the rent, so that and I heard Brother Boy earlier and Sister talking about the fights on their country. We're sick of our people battling to fight for their country. I'm married to a professional greenie who gets paid to campaign on climate change on other people's country. Why aren't our people remunerated for fighting on their country? Why do they have to fight to get food on their table and pay their rent and pay their electricity bills while they're out there fighting for country? And these other, you know, white fellas, it's their career choice. Like, pay the rent has to build the capacity of our grassroots activists with no questions asked, because that's where our fighters are. And they're the ones that the corporations step on. They're the ones that the corporations won't allow a membership to. They're the ones that get cut out. They're the ones that are sick, dying, incarcerated, children taken away. We need to build them fellas up. And then we'll see a revolution.
Thank you, Lydia. And I'll just, I'll throw to Marua, if that's okay. Marua, you spoke really powerfully at the Stop Adani convoy where the WNJ addressed potential allies about native title and how there's such a huge power imbalance inherent in that legislation at the moment across the continent, and that it's stacked and that land can still be forcibly taken away and manipulated. Could you speak to the Wangan and Jagalungu struggle with that mess?
Yes, hello again, and thank you, Lydia, for all those kind words, and yes, we do need to catch up soon. Thanks for the question, Kim. So I don't know if I made it very clear before, but yes, I've been a representative and spokesperson for the Wangan and Jagalungu Traditional Owners Family Council. That's the Wangan and Jagalungu Native Title Claim is the claim that my family are a part of, but our traditional boundaries and all of our different clan groups and different claim groups actually within the Birrugarra Nation acknowledge that we are one people, we have one law, one marriage system that ties us all together. And that relationship and kinship, which is essentially our living law, how we relate to each other, goes beyond native title and the boundaries that are assigned or written up by some white lawyers, you know, who say, oh, there's no one claiming native title here. What about we draw this box and find out who might be connected? So just in terms of, how I express my sovereignty, I think every day or make it a daily practice, but where it is a way of being, I think for me, to put it simply, it's just exercising your birthright is your sovereignty. And if you're an Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander person, if you're a First Nations person from Queensland or so-called Queensland or so-called Australia, then you are born with intrinsic, unique and distinct rights to your land and culture and whatnot as well. And I think for me, the way that I've been able to grow in my understanding of my personal sovereignty as well is I guess finding out through the native title context and where the disparities become very clear between domestic legislation and international standards that are agreed upon by, you know, all of the nation states and whatever. Obviously, they're all colonial settler states, and they have a certain apparatus and agenda as well. But in terms of international standard, free, prior and informed consent, Australia is woeful, obviously, and the domestic legislation actually actively works to undermine. And recent developments in native title legislation as well, especially the 2017 amendments, have actively undermined and further separated international standard with the domestic level at which we can use legislation to claim native title rights and interests. But I sound like I'm harping on just about native title. That's the context that I've sort of been able to work in. And also, I was, you know, I'm only a baby. I was born in 95. So I'm from the generation where, you know, we missed land rights and we missed all everything of the 70s, 80s and the early 90s. And all we got is Howard's version, very tight, narrow, and violent version of how Aboriginal people in Australia can try and claim country, in terms of obviously the legislation is just designed to reconcile the High Court decision and terra nullius, obviously, being a legal fallacy. Sorry, I'm just harping on there, but essentially it all comes down to free, prior and informed consent. And sovereignty for me is just about how you're able to live your birthright, and your sovereignty is impinged when your fundamental human rights and your birthright to culture and everything that previous generations have been entitled to and have been able to enjoy, that is yours, rightfully so. But obviously we are restrained from being able to enjoy that in the current state that we have to live in. That's a little bit about that, but thanks, I don't know if I answered
the question. Yeah, no, amazing. Thank you. And on free, prior and informed consent, Uncle Larry, I'd love to hear from you. The Sovereigns for Forests pointed that out, that there had never been any consent to log on your country. Can you tell us about asserting your sovereignty on Tanarong country, Uncle Larry, and a bit about consent there?
Yeah, well, as I said, my biggest difficulty is most of my people were removed for five generations. So the connection to land was broken. To put us back together again has been a big struggle. To get our language revived, our stories revive, our respect for what little knowledge our elders still had. And sometimes, because they make decisions, they say it's not our fault, it's the Act. As a technical argument that is used to be able to log. Loggers, in actual fact, if you look very carefully at the Logging Act of Victoria, you notice it has the right to override our sovereignty, Aboriginal sovereignty. The same with the Water Act. It has written into it the right to override ours. So the idea that they go to people and say, oh, quick, have a look for a tree with a scar. Have a look for a rock with a mark. We'll leave them alone. And if you can't find one of them, we'll go all the way through. So the acts on the whole three are wrong. I remember the original Act because I worked under it. And under the original Act, we had a lot more, this is the Victorian Act, we had a lot more power than we have today. We had a lot more decision-making process than we have today. So today, everyone seems to think it's about the scar tree or about the rock art or the scarred rock or about an oven in the ground. That is not that culture. It only shows you that people live there in that culture. The culture was who they were related to, the things, the birds. We have 9 ancestral beings. They were the 7 of them were the nephews of our creators. So all of a sudden, they're at risk because they're not important because they don't have scars that you could see with, you know, some of the Aboriginal scars. So it's wrong. I, through my life, have had to force government to change acts because of government lies. In this state, me and 2 cousins who have passed away were some of the ones to raise deaths in custody. I had a baby brother die in a cell. I went to help my cousins with their uncle. And we got to Canberra, where other Aboriginal people were gathering because it was so much happening in their state. Not the government, Aboriginal people gathering to tell the government this is wrong. But I always acknowledge the role of that great singer, Archie Roach, in it. Because without Archie's song, most people wouldn't have known what was going on. So I always acknowledge that one. Stolen Gents, because of so many of my family were part of it, and so many of them were hurting, and even I hurt. I have mental and emotional scars from it. I have physical scars from it. And they used to say that we must be exaggerating the truth. And then we're able to expose that there was a law that made us criminal, that forced us to be as children. I mean, what bank did I rob at the age of 2 to get a criminal record? So fought to change that. We fought to get the stolen generations heard. We fought to change the act that kept holding every kid back from being, because they had a criminal record. The last couple of years, because of what they're doing to my country, it's not improving my health. The only time I ever was at peace was when I was in forests, living near a riverway or a creek. It was the only time I ever had peace in my life. I'm just resigned 2 government committees because I don't feel I can take money from government while I want to fight them. Because people are blaming my tribe. And it's not my tribe, it's the act. You know? I've fought against police since I was 14. I fought against lots of people. Nobody ever noticed I was hurt because every time I felt things going on, I would go and find time to sit by a river and creek and listen to them.
Thank you.
I can't end. They love them if they get rid of them. I can't pay my respects to the people and the land that gives me my inheritance, my children's inheritance, the inheritance that went back to the beginning. And I have not felt so frustrated in a long time. And thanks to COVID, I've not been able to get away. I've not been able to do my usual disappearing act and disappear for a couple of weeks to sit, to feel the peace that I've always wanted.
Thanks, Uncle Larry. Thank you very much for sharing
that. That's what it's about.
I'm just going to pass to Erika now, who's actually mentioned COVID's impact on people getting back to country. But Erika, if you could tell us a bit more about Warren of Cunnock, your response to the colonial capitalist system is a new initiative, a new land back initiative, and it's a way of asserting sovereignty and self-determination. It's maybe about buying back land to protect and restore it. Please go into as much detail as you like.
So thank you, Uncle Larry. I really appreciate your words. I just want to acknowledge, Uncle Larry's, I want to acknowledge him and thank him for the, sharing that with us. I know it's very painful for Uncle Larry to share that, and it's important to acknowledge the pain that's behind them words. I think what I'm trying to do at the moment, it's not really new. I guess in this formula, it's not really been practiced too much. My mate up in Meanjin country did also do a GoFundMe to raise some money to buy some land last year and was pretty successful. I think this is something that I've been planning on doing for a couple of years, for about 4 years since I had a serious car accident. And it changed, a lot of my perspectives on things at that time. So, I've grown up in an activist family. We've just been born on the front line, no actual choice of anything. I'm pretty sure I've been marching on the streets of Melbourne since birth, and haven't stopped, and all for different reasons and different peoples, supporting peoples all over the country, all over the world. As Uncle Larry mentioned, we've been on lockdown this year, and it's taken a huge toll on our people, in particular in Melbourne. We have not been able to go back to our country, which I would also normally do. Living in Melbourne City is not, it's not healthy, but to be actually forced, to stay here has taken a huge toll on our people. We've lost people through suicide, and we've also got people, I'm supporting people now that are in psych wards and have serious mental health issues. So, this initiative, it looks at remedying the land and the peoples simultaneously. None of us are really, we don't have a lot of money to buy back land. We don't have land, we don't have our inheritance handed down to us because it was stolen. I guess that's the reason why I've put this initiative up to give people the opportunity to support me to buy some land and grow some of our Murnong and some of our other native foods, traditional foods that we did eat. Some of us still eating it. Build sanctuaries for our totems, our animals, you know, be able to go back and practice building our warrens. So warren is, in our language, it means home, and that's our traditional houses that we built out of the lava stone, the kulor. And they were huge houses. Some of those houses were up to 19 foot long. There was thousands and thousands of villages all over our country. And now, you know, they've, through colonization and through that time, they've taken our kulor and brought it to Melbourne, actually. Some of it's in my garden here. And it's all over the place. So we're needing to, get our kanak, which is the digging stick. For a while as an artist, I've been creating and designing digging sticks, kanaks, which is a, you know, gardening tool, but it's also an important tool of matriarchal law and women's law. We the way that I'm wanting to assert my sovereignty now is to have an actual land base that's, it's open for me to be able to do what I want with it without having to apply for a grant, which I have been for my whole career as an artist. And I feel like a slave to that, and I don't want to do that anymore. And also just I'm not interested in the corporate world. I don't vote. And I am setting up a business type structure, but it's not going to be the usual type. So that's my little chip away at asserting my sovereignty, and I'm hoping to really expand that and have camping grounds so that our people can have places that we can go and camp on. We just don't have access to land. A lot of our people around this country, as I know, do not have access to their own country, and that's important for so many reasons, but it's also important for our country to have us on our country. Because we belong to that country, and we need to be, we are one and the same. So, COVID has really fast-forwarded my initial plans to launch this next year, and really brought it back to the now. Yeah.
Thank you. Thanks so much for that. I just want to go back to something that Uncle Larry said before about it not being just about the scar tree or this or that bit of cultural heritage. And that seems to be a problem of the colonial government and court systems, how they always need this specific thing when it's actually about the landscape and the animals and the totems, as you guys have spoken to really beautifully, and also the knowledge systems. And I might quickly, if Nick can get it up, we've got a little video from Malika from the Matuara Fitzroy River Council. She wanted to be here tonight, so we'll quickly play that video. And then I wanted to have a little bit of a chat again with the panelists about when mining companies and gas companies or any colonial forces, roads, logging, everything we're talking about tonight, come in, what they're actually destroying. And it's so much more than a lot of people understand. So if Nick, you could chuck that video up, that'd be great.
Thank you. My name is Malika, and I am a woman who belongs to the Fitzroy River. This is a river where my mother's people grew up, the Nyigana people. One thing I've learnt from leaving my country is that there seems to be a misunderstanding in regards to Aboriginal lore. Some people call it folklore, other people call it Dreamtime stories. But what these are really doing is communicating to the next generation the science, lore and values of our people. Up on the hill country, there's a story of Dungaba, which actually represents the fact that there is gas underneath the earth. Over towards Yarra country, there's a story of a one-eyed snake who was actually mutated by uranium. These stories have so much more value to our people than to be classified as folklore. And I really wish that more people understood that there is an error in translation.
And just to acknowledge, obviously, that there are so many different nations and cultures across this continent, and no law or protocols are the same. But just for a bit of a conversation starter about science and philosophy and law and values that is throughout the landscape and songlines that extractive companies don't get when they just nitpick things. And I'll just go to Uncle Larry to respond first to this.
First of all, most Aboriginal people who learn about and understand a bit about their culture realises all our water comes from those underground sources, because the rain falls, the water falls, soaked into the ground, goes down and then pops up as those little springs that form our creeks, that form our rivers. The thing is, when you start that mining process, what you are doing is you're digging down and blocking the roots of those little waterways that connected to make the bigger river.
Quick, babe, quick!
And that's the problem. They don't understand it, they don't care, because as far as they can see, it's an endless source. They don't understand finite source. Everything is a finite source. Everything has only got a limit. And if we bust that limit, we bust the land. And when that happens, they'll give us back our land then, because we'll be dead. And that's the fearful thing. They'll wait until they've utilised every bit of it. And, you know, they use their Bible. Have you ever read it? In the old days, they actually left 30%, according to their Bible, to keep growing and for the poor. Now, you go pick a little blade of grass on their land and they'll bloody put the full force of the law on you. I can't be at peace in the world if I've got no water. I can't be at peace in the world if I've got no forest. I can't be at peace with the world if I've got no belief system left. It's, if you like, though I don't understand it properly, it's the only belief system I've got. And I don't want to change that belief system. But I don't want it destroyed. So I, my children, their future generations, do not get their inheritance and do not learn about country healing them.
Thank you, Larry.
If we had land and we had the capacity to bring our hurt children home, to help them learn those spirits are there with them, for them to learn from. I sometimes think it's too late for me, but I don't want the next generation being me's. I don't want any more me's. I see too many. Sometimes I point out to some of my friends, we better start seeing that kid. And they go, why? I said, can't you see? He's got an upset spirit. We know that when we look carefully, we can see the upset spirits. That's why I can't afford to lose another forest. We're in the Black Friday one. Hell, it was up the road from me where I was living in my country. People were trying to contact me to see if we were okay. And, yeah, contacting them afterwards to say, yeah, we're okay. It went around us. We were one of the lucky towns. And as part of the trying to heal after that, I toured some of those towns telling stories and talking to kids to try and stop them being scared of fire. It's not worth the emotional, mental and health well-being of our people to lose that. It's not worth my own healing. I'll never be able to do it if I lose all that. So I'm not saying it's a environment question. It's more than that. It's more than that. It's a way of us healing. And that's what's being overlooked a lot. You know, what Erika's trying to do shows that, trying to bring healing via land, a place where people can sit in their country and feel their country. Great idea. See, one of the things I'm doing is pointing out whenever the government says, oh, this is the way we operate, I look carefully and I find there's countries that operate differently, countries that the Indigenous people have got lots more rights than us. They're still fighting for other rights and they're still fighting for the tax on those rights. But the lessons are there on what the government denies is going on around the world. The government doesn't want us as Aboriginal people to know that there are some constitutions that protects their lands and waterways and protects their forests and gives them the role of custodian of them. I've joined a group for a while to assist with what was happening in Ecuador so I could learn what was happening in Ecuador to pass on to people. Because native title ain't my battle anymore. It's battling to get people to understand it's about healing, not about all these, I don't know, white man's words.
Thank you, Uncle Larry. You've spoken beautifully. Thank you so much, Uncle Larry. And I really hope you get back to your forest soon. Thank you so much for sharing so much of yourself then. Marua has had to go. She says, thank you, everyone. I just want to pass to Erika now about healing and about remedying land, because that's very much about your project. Can you, just to end the session now, tell us about your dreams and your vision for restoring and remedying your country and bringing that peace to people?
Thanks, Uncle Larry, very much for your words again. Really appreciate, appreciate that. Wurrinuf Kanak, it's about getting back home. As Uncle Larry said, it's very important. It's been a traumatizing time. I have to acknowledge again, that it really has traumatized our people, not being able, being restricted on top of our extreme circumstances of oppression, particularly in urban areas, which goes underrated or really understated. So this Land Back initiative is looking at regenerating paddocks that have been destroyed by hundreds of years of farming and being trampled by the hooves of animals that do not belong in this country. It's also looking at buying land that does have significant trees and significant sites on it that we can, you know, nurture and protect, and also waterways as much as land. Yeah, I don't know how much time you wanted me to. What time are we finishing?
It was at 8 o'clock, but it's 10:02, and like I think your initiative is super fascinating. I'm happy for you to continue talking about it if you like, but no pressure either. So totally up to you.
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure. The initiative is it has a lot of forming to happen over the time. We're looking at buying a small lot of land to, build the base. I'm wanting to give myself 3 years to build up a base. I have a small admin team at the moment, and I'm speaking to my elders and particularly, my family members about, what should happen next, or the plans. It's different to native title. It's native title is really looking at crown land or state forests or that type of land. So this is very much a different avenue. Farming land is 40% of this continent. I'm wanting to buy back as much as possible in my countries, obviously, to try and build a template that I can then, after the 3 years is up, I'm hoping to be able to take on other mobs that are looking to use the template. If it's successful, I guess, I will be able to I think with this project, personally, I'm going to be able to contribute a large amount of finance myself through a compensation claim from breaking my spine a couple of years ago, and I am really honest about that, just so that people don't, I just like to be transparent about those things. Some people don't like to talk about those things, but I think it's really important for people to know that that's my safety net. If the GoFundMe doesn't make the money, then I'm going to be able to push it forward with my own finances. And that's, I guess, something that is also a little bit different, a different standing in this situation. But it is growing. We're almost at $20,000. So, and it's been nearly 3 weeks. So I think it's going all right. I didn't expect it to move that fast. And there are a lot of fundraisers. I'm organizing a fundraiser to be a part of the 7 days of resistance. Previously, for the last 7 years, I've organised with Warriors of the Aboriginal Resistance and stepped down earlier this year just to take on other projects like this. I've historically been running banner making events and t-shirt printing events in the lead up to Invasion Day, which is what we, what Warriors of Aboriginal Resistance have tagged 7 days of resistance. So yeah, I'm holding a fundraiser potentially on the 24th or the 23rd. I'm not sure. So if you want to keep a lookout for that, hoping to have a land back banner making festival type thing where people can bring their own materials that they want to paint on, whether it be t-shirts or banners or whatever, and I'll supply the brushes and the paint. I'm just keen to get people, I guess into next year I will be looking at holding a few more talks around what this initiative will be and roll it out quite slowly. I'm not looking to spew everything out all at once. Do you have any particular questions that you wanted to?
That's fantastic. It sounds super exciting. And I think we put the crowdfunder in the chat before, but we'll also, if you don't mind, can email around your event when you've locked in the dates so that everyone can chuck in. Some of our speakers have had to jump off, but we've got, you know, we can donate to the WNJ, Gumbangia Conservation Group, a brilliant group to support. We'll basically send around different ways you can support the grassroots speakers that have spoken tonight. It's so important. You know, it's not Uncle Larry talking about his country being logged. That's up to us as settlers who are responsible for this to fix. So we need to get involved and, you know, message Blockaded IMARC, message any of the other co-hosts on this event if you want to get involved in this stuff, if you want to support these initiatives, and we'll try and make sure that the money's going to the right places for these amazing initiatives like Warren of Cunnock. It's nearly eight, so we probably want to wrap up. Do you have any last things to say, Erica?
Just thank you very much for having us all on behalf of everybody that's no longer with us, but thank you very much for hosting us and hosting all of the other, you know, important conversations throughout the week.
Thank you so much for coming. And I know Uncle Miklo jumped off, but I know we've still got Sandy. No pressure, Sandy, but if you want to say anything before you jump off as well about Gumbangia Conservation Group, you're welcome to, but no pressure.
I'm just taking it all in. I'm just so, you can see me now. I don't like being on camera, but hello. Just feeling so like amped up now just to kind of, you know, and I love what Erica was saying. I always admired her strength and her vision about, you know, buying our land back so we can go and sit and heal. And, you know, I really want to do that with the Nambucca State Forest, want to turn into a cultural heritage park or a biodiversity park, or, you know, but even better, like have place there we can do ceremony and for healing as well. And just, you know, this is the time now to assert our sovereignty. And I'm just so inspired and, you know, so thankful and grateful to Uncle and to all the sovereign people yarning tonight, because it just gives me, you know, power and strength to keep going. We've got a, you know, big Oscar-winning documentary maker, Eva Orner. She's interviewing us in the forest tomorrow, and I just, like, you know, it's good to like to yarn tonight and to listen, because that message is, we got to get that strong message out that we're here, we're not going anywhere. This is the time. So yeah, thank you everyone. And I'm not the best speaker, but I'll just get down there and I'll be on the ground and I'll be doing stuff tomorrow and I won't stop, so.
Thanks, Sandy. And yes, you are. You're an amazing speaker. Thank you so much, everyone, for joining us tonight. Super grateful that you've all shown up. And we'll keep in touch about how we can keep supporting these different groups and amazing people. Thank you so much, everyone. Have a good night.
We hope you enjoyed this podcast. For more information, on the Beyond Mining podcast series, Blockade IMARC, and much, much more, please visit blockadeimarc.com. Thanks for listening.